Where's Jesus? A few years back, Laura, Joshua, Rachel, and I took a family trip with just the four of us to Universal Studios in Florida. It was great fun, and it was kind of the last time the four of us just had a vacation together. And we did enjoy the park, although I confess I did manage to get a little nauseous on the Harry Potter ride. There's something about that ride. I don't know what it is. At Universal Studios, there were a number of attractions, but there was a restaurant there called Bubba's Shrimp House. Do you remember that, Rachel? Bubba's Shrimp House. And the name comes, of course, from the famous movie Forrest Gump. When Forrest meets that character Bubba, who, remember they were scrubbing the floor in the movie? And Bubba is regaling Forrest with all the recipes he knew about for using shrimp. In the restaurant in Florida, they had a young woman in the gift shop next to the restaurant who was going about meeting with people in the gift shop, giving out prizes to anyone who could answer a trivia question about the movie. And little did she realize that Forrest Gump is my son Joshua's favorite movie. He's seen it I don't know how many times. He can quote many lines from that particular movie. The young lady dropped a question on us that, boof, it would seem almost impossible to answer. But without missing a heartbeat, Joshua gave the correct answer to the trivia question and he won a prize. I think it was a deck of cards or something like that. I forget what it was. Now, I understand why Joshua loves that movie so much. There's a great deal in that movie to commend it to us. Inside that movie are themes of love and loyalty. And just watching Forrest Gump go from one incredible adventure to another is a lot of fun to watch. And many of us in this room right now can quote at least one line from that movie. How about this? Mama says, I can't say it like him, I'm sorry. Joshua could say it just like Forrest Gump. Mama says life is like a box of chocolates. You never know what you're gonna get. Remember that line? I wish I had Josh here today. He could tell us that line in that accent. Now, there's a funny part in that Oscar-winning movie that seems a little bit odd at first. It shows Forrest Gump who's upset because his beloved Jenny has run off again. And what does Forrest do? He starts running. He runs clear across the country, or county, the state, and eventually he runs right across the country to the ocean. He sleeps when he is tired, he says. He eats when he's hungry. And generally, he just runs. Over time, people notice him running, and they get interested in why he's running. And so they join him, and this crowd begins to run with him. As he reaches the one coast, he simply turns around and runs back again across to the other side of the country. People stop and ask him why he's running, and he said he doesn't really know, other than he likes to run. On about his fourth crossing of the country, followed by quite a crowd by this point, he suddenly stops in the middle of nowhere. And when the crowd asks him why he stopped, he simply says, I'm tired. And without a second thought, he goes home. So what was the point of all that running? The reality was there really wasn't any point at all, other than it helped Forrest cope with the grief he had over losing Jenny. Did you notice this morning when I read this gospel lesson to you how much running there is in that lesson? An awful lot of running for people who are supposed to be in grief. In fact, if you spend time with it, it starts to get to be a bit of an exhausting text to read. Everybody in this passage is running somewhere. And it's an odd thing because if you read through the Bible as a whole, there's very little running mentioned anywhere in the scriptures. But here, it's everywhere. Why on earth is everybody running around? And why on earth is everyone running around in the most unlikely of places? Cemetery. Now, I've been in lots of cemeteries over the years. In fact, I even worked in one for a whole summer one year. And except for the odd jogger that goes through occasionally, I've rarely seen people running in a cemetery. In cemeteries, I've noticed that we tend to walk. Actually, we walk quietly and we walk slowly and sometimes we walk with apprehension. But in this case, we see everybody running to and fro from a tomb. Now, running's not a foreign concept to you and I. Every morning when I'm coming to the church, to the office, I see people running. They usually have on their jogging suits and they've got their iPads in their ears. But I've noticed they don't look very happy when they're running. But they run anyway. I've seen people running around their offices like their pants are on fire. I think they've got to be very busy people, or they're trying to look busy. I've even been at Pearson International Airport watching people trying to make a connection running from gate 1 to gate 60 and trying to emulate Donovan Bailey. I mean, they're really moving. I've seen parents, maybe some in this room have this experience, running from work to school, soccer practice, then maybe to a church event. Somehow squeezing supper in there. Like with Forrest Gump, I wonder sometimes, why do we run? I'm not sure most of the people I see running do so because they like it. I'm not even sure that the people I see running even know why they are running. The one thing I don't see very much of is people just running for the joy of it. No one seems to enjoy the speed that they're expending to get to somewhere important. We have an expression, of course, in the English language of chasing the white rabbit. You all know where that comes from. It's from the book Alice in Wonderland. It refers to the white rabbit who was constantly checking his watch, all the while shouting, "I'm late, I'm so very late." And Alice is wondering, what's he late for? She follows him down the rabbit hole. Chasing the white rabbit means we are chasing something without even knowing why. And again, it seems that nobody is enjoying all the rushing around, all the running they are doing, even if they believe it is important. Except children. If I was to take this group of children that were here this morning and I turned them loose in that gym, they would run within seconds. Not because they're being chased, although if you wanted to chase them, well, they'd love that even more. They enjoy running because, well, not because they're overcommitted or because they're trying to get their heart rate up or to get their waistline down. They run because it's fun for them to run. It empowers them somehow the faster they go. It is with childlike spirit of running that we read of the people running in our gospel lesson today. The running we read about has kind of a light-footed feel to it. Feet that were wounded and scarred by the kind of experiences in life are suddenly set free and running. We might have a little bit of trouble appreciating just what was happening here, but three individuals in this story today got their feet moving. They got their hearts racing for joy and hope and faith. Just consider for a moment how monumental a shift occurred in the hearts of those in our gospel lesson today. Mary Magdalene, who had witnessed firsthand the horror of the crucifixion. A person just wrought with crushing grief. I'm sure her mind and heart were flooded with questions about why did this happen to someone I loved, someone who was clearly God-centered and God-sent, and someone who clearly was non-threatening to everybody else. It was such a miscarriage of justice for her. Why would they kill someone who could perform miracles like exorcisms and healings and even raising people from the dead? Mary Magdalene was believed to be someone Jesus had delivered from demons, and boy, she just adored Jesus. her world would have been turned upside down by the crucifixion. So she comes. She comes early in the morning. She's not running at this point. You know, after all, the dead aren't going anywhere. She has come to pay her respects and to grieve and to remember. But upon arrival, she sees that the tomb is empty, and suddenly her pace quickens as she runs to report to the disciples that the tomb is empty. They've taken Jesus. And Peter and John join in the race. They run back to the tomb, not sure of what is happening. Where's Jesus? And looking into the empty tomb, Peter couldn't make sense of it, and the Bible says that John looked in and then finally went in himself, and he said to have believed. Later, Mary, of course, encounters the risen Jesus, and she runs again, declaring, I've seen the Lord. What makes you run? What gets your feet moving fast? Does joy feed your need for speed, or does obligation? This world, it seems to me, is getting faster and faster. We were promised that as technology advanced and society developed, we would have more leisure, we would have more time to enjoy life, but it seems like it's just getting worse and worse and worse. 40-hour weeks are now 50 or more. We have fewer children as a society, but it seems that we're expending enough energy that we're caring for 10. We have Blackberries, we have cell phones, we have portable computers. Still, we complain we haven't got enough time and we're exhausted. Let us be honest. We're running, you and I, but we're not moving with much joy. Let me suggest for your consideration that we make a serious effort to begin to examine our reason for running through life. Why do we work and play and socialize at breakneck speed? Can it be that we think the more we do, the more value we think our lives have? It is a serious danger to our souls to fall into the trap of thinking that our worth and our purpose, even our salvation, are somehow tied to being busy. Consider for a moment how fearful we become when we worry that people will find out that we're not busy at all. You know, in several companies and businesses, there are people who are basically doing what we might call busy work. They're trying to look indispensable to management so that they won't be deemed redundant and they won't be laid off. Could it be that we've come to hope more in our own abilities and the capturing of more opportunities than we do in the hope that made Peter, John, and Mary run through a cemetery? I'm mindful of a story about a woman who was doing her last-minute Christmas shopping in a crowded mall. Been there, done that. She was just tired of standing in long lines. She was tired of fighting her way through crowded aisles and stores, looking for a gift that had sold out the day before. Her arms were full of bulky packages when the elevator doors opened and it was full. The occupants of the elevator grudgingly tightened ranks in order to allow her a small space where she could squeeze in with her load. And as the doors closed, she blurted out, "Whoever is responsible for this whole Christmas thing ought to be arrested, strung up, and shot." A few others nodded their heads and grunted in agreement, and then from somewhere in the back of the elevator came a single voice that said, "Don't worry, they already crucified him." Where is the joy in your hasty pursuits? Can it be that we are like Mary, so overcome by distractions, so overcome by the pain of life, we can't even recognize Jesus standing right in front of us? Could it be that we're so frightened to stop our hectic pace that we fail to pause and just see the wonder of life? Wherein lies your hope? Is it in something your hands have created, your car drove you to, or your television has entertained you with? How fast do we have to run through life before it has any significant meaning for us? Maybe we are running through a cemetery. Maybe we're running through monuments to failed human achievement. Running among or from buried dreams and dashed hopes. Maybe we're running so hard through life because we hope to catch something of the sacred. To catch that one thing or that one person that means so much more than we currently possess. Let me say that again. Maybe we are running so hard through life because we hope somehow to catch the sacred or the eternal. Today of all days is the day when the world has got to stop its hasty pace to nothing and start quickening its pace to the one source of hope that we can all cling to. Easter is a day to remember and to celebrate that the powers of this world, whether they be political, religious, economic, social, or psychological, they do not have the last say today. That even in the very place, a cemetery that screams of despair and loss, there's reason to run for joy. How long has it been since we felt breathless and telling the world, I've seen the Lord? It was 1912 that music publisher Dr. Adam Geibel asked C. Austin Mills to write a hymn that would be sympathetic in tone, breathlessly tenderness in every line, one that would bring hope to the hopeless, rest for the weary, and downy pillows to dying beds. That's an actual quote. Does that not sound like what our busy lives and busy hearts are like? That what we're crying out for? That we're looking for hope for the hopeless and rest for the weary? See, Austin Mills, clearly inspired by God from his reading of this very passage, John 20, composed a hymn that is probably second in popularity to the old rugged cross. And although it, to our modern sensibilities, there's some difficulty with these words and concepts, the point's still valid, I think. In thinking of Mary's two trips to the garden tomb on that first Easter day, he composed the following. I come to the garden alone, while the dew is still on the roses. And the voice I hear falling on my ear, the Son of God discloses. And he walks with me and he talks with me. And he tells me I am his own. And the joy we share as we tarry there, no other has ever known. He speaks and the sound of his voice is so sweet, the birds hush their singing, and the melody that he gave to me with my heart is ringing. And he walks with me and he talks with me and he tells me I am his own. And the joy we share as we tarry there, none other has ever known. I'd stay in the garden with him through the night, though the night around me is falling, but he bids me go through his voice of woe. His voice to me is calling, and he walks with me and he talks with me and he tells me I am his own. And the joy we share as we tarry there, none other has ever known. Maybe, before we run any further, you and I, we got to listen to the voice that's calling out to each one of us. Maybe before we run with joy, we need to be transformed by the hope that cannot fail us. A hope born out of Christ's resurrection and discovered by those who dared to run towards it. So are you running towards the hope? Or are you chasing white rabbits? Easter offers all of us a choice. Come. Christ is ready, willing, and able to do more for us. And he's always ready to to walk with us and talk with us, tell us we are his own.